What is going on, my friends? Welcome back to the What If Project podcast. My name is Glenn. I am your host, and this is episode 296 of the show. I have to say it again because I'm saying it like every week. I can't believe that we're almost to episode 300. 300 episodes of the show. Almost, what is it, 6 full years in. This has been wild. I'm going to have a lot of thoughts to share on that day before the recording. But we actually have Brian McLaren coming back on the show for that day. He's going to talk to us about his new book, Life After Doom. And we're also going to reminisce a little bit because I've known Brian for a while, even before I started the podcast. And he has been a big encouragement and cheerleader for me. And so we're going to reminisce a little bit. We're going to talk about his new book. And it's going to be a wild, wild time. But this, today, episode 296, we're talking to John Turney. John wrote a book called RJ the Astronaut. Now, if you go to Amazon and you look up this book, you're going to come away with the idea that this is a science fiction novel. And if you're like me, someone who doesn't read a lot of fiction to begin with, when I hear science fiction, I see an astronaut on the cover of the book, my immediate thought is, okay, this is like a Star Wars type thing. And it kind of has that vibe, right? Because RJ's an astronaut. He goes to space in this state-of-the-art spaceship. Then he gets stuck up there and he's alone. But that, for me, is where the science fiction stops, and this really takes a turn to become a very, very, very deeply spiritual book, because RJ has this conversation in space with a voice. Is it his internal inner voice? Is it the voice of God, Jesus, the Holy Spirit, the universe, the cosmos, whatever? Whatever he's talking to, he's having this very deep, profound conversation where he's posing to this voice all these questions about life and God and faith and the Bible and Jesus and the cross and heaven and hell and theology and all these different things. And it's really, these are questions that all of us have, whether we have the words to put on them or not, especially if you're in that world of deconstruction, rethinking your life and your faith and all the things that you were taught to believe. John, through RJ, the character in the book, puts words on so many of those questions, and he does it so, so well. So this is a book you've got to get. There's 51 chapters. I think there's 51. Each chapter deals with like a different topic, a different question. And you might have some things in there like, yeah, I'm not wrestling with this. But I guarantee you there's going to be stuff in this book that you're like, oh yeah, I've wondered this before and I've never thought of it in this particular way. This book is going to put your heart at ease in terms of a lot of different questions that you might have been wrestling with, or maybe you will be wrestling with down the road, but this is a good companion for your journey. So I'll put the links to John's stuff in the show notes. Also a link to this book, a link to my books, Rethinking Everything, Emerging from the Rubble. And of course, the art studio. If you haven't stopped by there, check it out. It's a place where I'm just sharing my joy. Hopefully it will inspire you to find your own joy and to do the things that bring you joy in the world so that you can spread that joy to other people as well. whatifproject.net/art. And also Patreon, if you want to support the show financially, it's a place that you can do just that. There's different tiers. Every tier gets the same exact reward, which is entrance into our Discord chat group where we chat throughout the course of the week. Some weeks it's really busy, some weeks it's really slow, but it's there if you need it. And people are always there to answer and to talk to and to make you feel less crazy in your spiritual journey. So anyway, my friends, all that to say, episode 296 of the show with the one and the only John Turney. Enjoy. We'll be right back. All right, hey everybody, welcome back to the podcast. Today we are joined by a brand new guest. His name is John Turney. He's written a really, really good book called AJ the Astronaut that I highly recommend. RJ the Astronaut that you, I highly recommend you go and buy today. And so John, my friend, welcome to the podcast. It's great to have time with you.
Thank you. I am really excited to be here to talk about the book and, you know, whatever else we end up talking about.
Who knows where yeah, this really. Spaceship will lead us.
bad plumbing, potential snow.
COVID, right?
COVID, yeah.
That's it.
It's still a thing, guys.
It's still a thing. It's still out there. So before we get into all the good stuff with this book, can you talk a little bit about yourself for people who maybe are new to you, your name? Tell us about your work, your podcast that you have with your brother. Tell us the inner workings of John Turney.
Well, I'm a 53-year-old cisgender white male. So, you know, we're really rare.
Not too many of them out there, right?
Yeah. Yeah, we're like the albino zebra.
Right.
No, I jest. I grew up and born and raised in Humboldt County, California. Lived most of my life in the county seat of Eureka, California, with a gigantic population of 28,000. Nat and I always joke because Nat will get on when we're talking. He's like, "I'm from a small town." I was like, "Dude, you're from a town of 150,000.
Right.
That's not a small town." He's like, "Well, in comparison to Dallas," I was like, "Yeah, yeah, okay." But So lived most of my life in Eureka, California. Nat and I both did. Went to school there, went to church there. Spent my misspent youth of, you know, experimenting in drugs and alcohol and all that fun stuff as you're growing up within the church, because I think a lot of us end up doing that.
Yeah.
I left the church when I was about 18 or 19, just because there was too many questions and no one willing to answer them. Really why I left. There's a story, and this has been going around a little bit. When I was about 8 or 9, I was the kid in Sunday school asking all the weird questions. You know, like, I'd raise my hand. It's like, if Adam and Eve were the only two people on the planet,
right,
and then they had kids, who did they marry and how did they have babies? Yep. Those are the kind of questions I got.
Same.
And so it was years. I was very much an adult when one day my parents decided to tell me about a story they had, which is getting called into the pastor's office around that time and asking to talk to me about the questions I'm asking in Sunday school and to not ask them. To my parents' credit, for whatever reason, they chose not to tell me that meeting had even happened. But even at 8 or 9, I think kids are pretty smart and they decide on their own. It's like, things aren't what they seem. People don't like these questions. So I kind of just shoved the questions down. And I did that for a long time. And I was ending up living this double life of pretending to be a really good church guy. And Nat even talks about this too, about how he admired how much I was 100% in. And a part of that 100% in was I was trying to fake a persona for my parents, for my fellow church friends. So I had this fake version of me that was 100% in. I was the guy wearing striper shirts to school every day. You know, because my parents didn't let me listen to heavy metal, but they let me listen to Striper and other Christian metal bands. I don't know if you remember a band called Exodus So I would listen to these bands but secretly listen to the other stuff. But at the same time, I was secretly hanging out with this other group of people, smoking pot, you know, drinking, cutting school. And it all kind of came to a culmination at an intervention on me with my youth group, which was what ended up just breaking me. And like, I'm done. And so then I went on this search, right, of what can fill this hole that was the divine. And, you know, I searched into Buddhism, Taoism, Hinduism a little bit. I never tried Islam or Muslim, trying to be a follower of Muhammad, only because it seemed so much like Christianity to me, that they were both so dogmatic and so, that it almost felt to me like two peas in a pot.
Yeah,
that there wasn't enough difference for me to even attempt there. And, you know, to my Muslim friends, obviously I was ignorant at that time and I probably should have looked into it a little bit. So those of us that know better now, I would like, okay, they're not the same and there is some difference.
Sure.
But I did that. I got married at 21 to an atheist who I still am married to, still love dearly. She's still an atheist. I dabbled in atheism for a while, but for me, it didn't answer some questions. So I would say that I lived in this world of an agnostic for a very long time. Through some events out of my control, I ended up home for 6 months when I was in my late 40s. And I ended up driving my daughter to school every day, and then meeting my parents for lunch. My parents are still very, very conservative Christians, and my dad kept trying to get me to read books by these old English white guys. And I finally gave in and said, fine, I'll read this book by C.S. Lewis, because at least I know him, because I'd read his Narnia stuff. And it was called Mere Christianity. And that was my step back into the faith for a while. And apologetics, and some people are going to agree with me, and some people are going to disagree. Apologetics are a good stepping stone, but you can't stay there. And so I vowed that this is the book I'm going to read once a year. It's going to renew my faith every year. And every year from then, I read it and less and liked it less and less and less, to the point where I'm like, I can't read it. I just can't read it anymore. But in that process of doing that, I stepped into an associate pastor position at a local Southern Baptist church. So, you know,
Man,
I went
what a
hardcore.
story this is.
But the problem was, you know, at the time I'm doing this, I'm still who I was, right? So I'm still fully affirming. I still believe that we need to talk about BIPOC rights, indigenous, you know, so Black Lives Matter, indigenous rights, LGBTQIA plus community rights. I'm still all of that, but I can't preach any of it, you know, on my one day a month that I get to preach. So, and my brother, unbeknownst to me, it was going through the same deconstruction at the same time. So he's also preaching occasionally. So we would share notes. And the notes would usually start like this: I saw where you went and then you didn't go there. And
You
we were both
stop.
like, yeah, we were like, I can't go there. And so I finally had to have a come to Jesus moment with the pastor and basically say, hey, I'm not your guy. I'm just not. And to be honest and fair to you, because you're going to continue this church and you're looking for someone to replace you when you retire, I can't be that guy. Because if I am that guy, I'm going to preach what I want when you leave, and the congregation's going to leave. Every single
It's
one of
just gonna
them will
be
leave.
me here.
And that's not fair. That's not fair to the church. So I step out, let him find someone who's, you know, potentially is a good fit for him. We're still friends. We still have meaningful conversations about things I think he should talk about in church. And he's like, sometimes he's like, yeah, I agree with you. And sometimes it's like, dude, you're off your rocker. And that's fine.
That's good.
But we're still friends. And I
That's
think
good.
the way I left was able to maintain that. If I had just said, hey, screw you, you're a nut job, I can't believe anything you believe, we wouldn't be friends. And so that was a level of maturity that I had reached finally, that I could do it that way and still maintain friends with this guy. But I was still using the Bible as a weapon, going after my conservative fundamentalist evangelical friends who like to cherry pick, right? So I was like, if you can cherry pick, I can cherry pick, and I can blast you so good.
Cherry pick with the
So that's
best of
what I
them,
did, right? So that's
right?
what I was doing on Facebook, on Instagram, any of those places. I was just blasting them back. And then all it became was this argument, this huge argument on Facebook. Nat and I were both doing it. And we would be have this silent, the side little message going. It's like, can you believe they said that? Can you believe they did that? And at some point, I'm like, this is utterly ridiculous. I'm doing what they did, just on the other side. And no one's changing anybody's mind. Nobody. So I promise this story is going somewhere.
I'm following you. I'm here.
So I was religious, but the church I went to, which was a four square church, never really followed any of like the more orthodox type things of church, right? So this idea of Lent was never something that I understood. The whole like putting a cross, which I just thought was a big X, like a dirty X on someone's face. I didn't know why they did that. But as I looked into it, because Nat and I were both actually looking into more orthodox churches as to something that we might connect with, Lent really became something that was of interest to me, of, you know, giving up something that is important to you, you know, to have a better communication or a better communion with God. So I ended up giving up the Bible for Lent. That's what I did. And so, and I told myself I won't open it. If I'm going to argue with somebody, it has to come from my own brain. Ideally, don't argue at all. But if I do need to have some kind of argument, it needs to come from my own intuition without pulling out holy scriptures. So I did that. And at the end of Lent, I was like, I don't think I need this anymore at all. I don't think I need the Bible. I feel like whatever's, if there is a God, he's smart enough, or they are smart enough to communicate with me
Right.
and give me whatever words of wisdom they determine that I need. So from that came this idea. I was like, I wonder what would happen if I was able to have a character who had no connection to the Holy Scriptures, could not read them, could not use them in any way. And so I'm mulling that over my brain. I was like, there's no way on this planet you could do that with the today's technology. There's no way. I mean, I would have to make them like in the deep, dark jungles of some third world country, right? And that just sounds really trite and kind of and then it would, and then I'd have to also be writing from a character that I didn't understand. So this idea of putting them in space came, and I was like, well, what if they were in space and there was some kind of cataclysmic event that it made them alone, and then they're hurtling somewhere in space, and then they hear the voice of what they think is God. So that started out as a blog that which turned into this book. I'll fast forward a little bit. So the blog I thought would go on forever, ended up writing it for about a year and with an actual ending. And then at the end of that, I didn't know what to do. I didn't know where to move next. And that was the birth of the podcast. During this time, I had been listening to a lot of podcasts. Heretic Happy Hour was probably my introduction into the world of deconstructing podcasts. And then I just went deep, deep dive into a whole bunch of podcasts. And by the end of writing RJ, I reached out to Nat. I was like, I think we can do a podcast. I really do. And at the time, Nat was still in church and I was out of church. So I was like, wouldn't it be cool to have a voice of two people working for the same goal, but from different perspectives? So that was the birth of This Is Not Church, which started out as a little blog of me making posts about something, and the end title would be This Is Not Church. But I found out really, really quick, people don't get parody and sarcasm very well. So I got a lot of really weird feedback, people pissed off, because when I did one about women and women preaching in church, but I did it very sarcastically. And then I got, these comments. I'm really shocked. I thought you were more progressive than this. You think women shouldn't preach in church? I was like, did you read my post? It was mocking them. I was mocking them. So I figured, well, I can put that out in my voice better than I can in writing. So why don't we do stuff like that on a podcast? So that was, and Nat and I decided to do it, went full on. I did like an email blast to like 25 or 30 people who I thought would be amazing to talk to, thinking we might get five yeses, and we got like 30 yeses.
That's
And we're like,
awesome.
oh, geez, now we have a scheduling problem. So we,
Right?
and
How do I
then now
jam all
we,
these
yeah.
conversations in?
And we're literally just a week or so away from 3 years. So we've been doing this for 3 years now.
Good for you,
And
man.
it's been a blast. We talked to some amazing, amazing people. I got a shelf right here of just books of people that we've talked to. And it's, Pete Enns was one of my heroes that I got to talk to. I have a couple of Henry Nouwen books, but it's not because we talked to Henry Nouwen, because unfortunately he's passed away. But we talked to the person who finished one of his last books posthumously, which was, I always get the name wrong, Flying, Falling, Catching. I think it was his time with this trapeze group that he had kind of fallen in love with and toured with for a while. It's a really quirky but yet amazing book that this young lady that I now have forgotten her name, she got to finish, and it's an amazing book. But I mean, got to talk to Paul Young, Brad Jersak, a lot of my heroes, right? But yeah, that's the story of me.
When you talk about when you were young having these questions, and then the pastor going to your parents, and your parents thankfully not sharing that with you. But I can remember being I went to a private Christian school from the 4th through 12th grades, and I went to Bible college, I went to seminary, I was always the kid that had the questions. Same thing like about Adam and Eve, even about like the animals on the ark. I'm like, well, if the ark was real, like, what did they eat? Like, what did the lions eat? Well, I'm like, well, they eat meat, right? I learned that in science class. Lions eat meat. So if they're on the, and now I'm in Bible class going, if they're on the ark, what meat are they eating? Like, how did Noah keep the meat? How did you store the meat? All these different questions, and the teachers didn't know what to do with that. They're like, well, we just have to have faith, that this is the way that it worked. That was always the answer that I got. And so then I grew up thinking, well, if I have all these questions, maybe I don't have enough faith. And so then it became time to like buckle down on, just really, going into all the apologetic stuff to try to get all the answers to these kinds of questions and then explain them away. And that's kind of how I grew up until my theology eventually just like exploded. And here I am.
Well, and the problem with apologetics is they're candy coated answers. So they
Yeah.
sound really nice, and they're
Yeah.
really, it's like, it's like eating a nice piece of candy. But if you eat too much of it, you get sick.
Yep.
And I kind of feel that way about apologetics. By the end of, when I'm starting to really like delve deep into apologetics, I'm like, well, none of these are real answers.
Yeah.
These are like answers light.
Yep.
Like, I think you could say this about the answers that are given, for me, mainly C.S. Lewis, who I love. I love his science fiction. It's one of my all-time favorite trilogies,
Yeah.
his space trilogy. And I honestly think when it comes to someone like C.S. Lewis, there are two versions of him. And there's the version that we see in his writing, and there's the version you see in his private writings. And his private writings, his letters between him and his friends, is where you start to question. Because one of his heroes is MacDonald, who was a universalist. And you got to question why he would pick MacDonald as one of his heroes. And if you read his writings and his letters, you start to get the idea that there's a little bit more to C.S. Lewis than Narnia.
That's right.
Which, even by the way, Narnia has a very good universalist message too,
Yeah.
if you're willing to find it.
Yeah.
But back to his apologistic work, it just falls flat a lot of times, and that was my issue.
Yeah.
And so I don't even I lost my train of thought. I'm not even sure where we were going on that, other than I love him, and that, but I don't like all of his work. I guess
Yeah.
that's my biggest thing about C.S. Lewis.
Yeah, I got on the CSOs for a while, and then like The Mere Christianity was big for me, and I too made that same kind of commitment. Like, I'm going to read this, like once a year, every other year, because this was like the huge, this was like next to the Bible, in the world I was in. Like, this is it, And so I was like, I'm going to read this all the time. And, like, the second, third time through, I'm like, yeah, I don't know. Like, I don't know if this is really doing it for me. And then I came across things, with C.S. Lewis that I had learned about from outside of his work. I'm like, I don't know if this guy really was sold in everything he was writing all the time, because I feel like there's like you said, there's two sides to this coin. But that in itself gave me freedom, because I'm like, man, I grew up with all these different ideas, very fundamentalist and everything, all the T's crossed, I's dotted. And if C.S. Lewis had another side to him, maybe it's okay for Glenn to have another side to him as well and have
Absolutely,
all these questions I'm exploring. So,
Well, I mean, the first book I read of his that made me really question would be The Great Divorce. I'm like, and I was like, well, it's an allegory. Well, yeah, it's an allegory about some kind of midpoint between life and death. I mean, you gotta question why he's writing this, And for me, the end of it was, I think C.S. Lewis is telling us that death isn't the end. And I think that's biblical too. So that was the start of my step into universalism, which I'm not even sure I'd call myself a universalist anymore, but not because I don't believe it. I think I've taken a step past it. Universalist still means that there's some form of salvation you need. And I'm not sure that's even the issue anymore. I'm not sure salvation is the question. I believe if everyone is saved, then salvation isn't really an issue anymore.
Come
So
on, John.
I you got to get
Preach.
out of this. Well, you got to get out of this Christianese, right? So you got to get out of this idea that, and we're using Christianese because we don't know how else to talk about it, because that's what we were raised in. So universal salvation is what we give everybody. But if it's universal, salvation isn't needed. And you're going to find, as you read my book, that I do talk about this, but I'm talking about it from a Christian perspective because that's what I was raised in. So there's things in there that, as I look back, I mean, I'm like, I'm not sure I believe that anymore. But that's okay. That's what I believed when I wrote it. And I think that's important with, this idea of quote unquote deconstruction, which is another word I'm not sure I really hold on to much anymore.
Yeah.
But the whole idea is that you don't stay where you were. You've got to keep moving. And this whole idea of like, well, when are you going to reconstruct? The easy answer that I give most people is never. I don't think I'm ever going to reconstruct.
Yeah.
And it's not that I'm not rebuilding something, but I'm rebuilding it and tearing it down, or rebuilding it and tearing it down. I'm consistently trying to find a better version of it.
That's
And
right.
as soon as I sit myself in a place and I build another mansion or whatever you want to call it, I'm now back into another ism, right?
Yeah.
I'm going to start building rules. I'm going to start building language about around this version of me.
Yeah.
And then 5 years from now, I'm going to be just as dogmatic as the people I left.
Yep.
And I don't ever want to be that again. I think questions are the answer.
Yep.
Being willing to be uncertain is the answer. Live
Yep.
in that uncertainty. That's the world I live in now, and I am the happiest I've ever been being that person.
Yeah.
So.
Wow. That's really good. You know, when I moved out of the, when I started like moving out of the evangelical world and doing the whole deconstruction thing, I brought that fundamentalist mentality with me
Right.
to the
Yeah.
other side, you know, because I was raised to always believe I had to have an answer. You know, that verse in
Right.
Peter, whatever, you gotta have an answer for the questions that are posed at you. Like that was my
Yeah.
mantra. And so I'm like, all right, well, now I'm on the other side, but now the people I left over there are asking me questions about, well, what do you believe about hell now? And why do you believe this? Why do you believe that? So I felt like I had to have my new repertoire of cherry-picked verses, you know, to kind of prove
Yeah.
my
Yeah.
point. And so like you and your brother, I was in the comments all the time with people. And now I'm in this place, just like in the last couple of years, where now I feel like I've got everybody upset with me because I've said, you know, I don't, I've given up on like the atonement, don't care, you know, like substitutionary, don't care,
Don't care.
all the
Yep.
stuff about universalism, don't care, you know. But then
Yep.
I've also got the, now I've got other people upset with me. The progressive side is upset with me too, because I said, well, I don't really care about deconstruction. Like, I don't feel like I am deconstructing. It's like I'm just me. Like, I'm just out here living
Yeah.
my life in this lifeboat of a podcast I've created out in the middle of the ocean. People are welcome to jump on board, ask questions, wonder about things,
Right.
live in the mystery. That's just kind of where I'm at, you know, and I feel
Well, it's
like
like it's
I love it here.
Yeah, it's like that question that was asked of Ricky Gervais, who's, as everyone knows who listens to our podcast, he's my second favorite atheist because my wife is my favorite. My wife will always be my favorite atheist, but Ricky Gervais is my second favorite atheist. And someone asked him, he's like, well, if you don't believe in heaven or hell, what's the purpose of life? He's like, what do you mean, what's the purpose of life? I only have this life. There's nothing, I'm not trying to reach a goal to go someplace else on some pearly gates and
Yeah.
streets of gold. I have to be the best version of myself, the best human being I can, because this is all there is.
Yeah.
So I have to love unconditionally. I have to create a world of peace and love and understanding and grace now, because this is
Yeah.
the only moment I have. And for me, moving past this idea of universal salvation, so I have zero idea of what's happening after I die. Zero.
Yeah.
And honestly, I don't care. I'm more on the idea now that we know that matter cannot be destroyed, right?
Yeah.
So at some point we are going to die, and we're going to re-enter this universe as something. And that might be a cosmic thing, or that just might be we move on and continue to make sure this planet does what it does.
Yeah.
I'm okay with either. I really am. If there ends up being a place where I have some kind of conscience and I'm available to speak and understand, cool, great. I just sure hope it's not the pearly gates and the streets of gold and we sit around and worshiping this
Singing
guy on a
hymns
chair,
all day.
singing hymns to him, playing a harp. What a boring ass place that'll be.
Right.
But I mean, if
Sounds like
heaven exists,
hell.
yeah, exactly. And I'm
Right.
sitting next to Hendrix and Stevie Ray Vaughan, and we're all jamming out to whatever we want to play.
There you
That's
go.
cool. I'll do
Right.
that. But I don't think that's what's going to happen.
Yeah.
But yeah, so in writing this book, that's what I did too, is I asked these questions and trying to move forward this progress through a fictionalized character. So that one of the questions that's asked to me a lot is this a memoir? Yes and no. There's
Yeah.
parts of that character who absolutely are not me, but I know people like that
Sure,
person,
sure,
right?
sure, sure.
So it's a it's a it's a I can't think of the right word. It's like a a mixture of me and then other people that I've had conversations with who also have questions, right? So I'm not part of the LGBTQIA plus community, but I know enough and I've heard their questions. So I know what kind of questions they would ask. I'm obviously not part of the BIPOC community, but I've had conversations with the BIPOC community and they have told me the questions that they would ask, or it's like if I was face to face with God, I'd be like, well, hey, dude, WTF, or what the fuck, or what do you want to say about this moment. So am I saying that I have the answers for them? No, but I understand the questions that they would have. And I try to delve into those as safely as I can, as again, a middle-aged cisgender white person. I try to do it the best I can, but in no way do I ever claim to have answers for them. But I try to come up answers that I would hope that I would give someone if they asked me that question, right? Does that make sense?
Definitely. So as I was reading the book, like it was obvious to me that part of it was memoirish, but part of it was not, because there was those pieces in there and I'm like, okay, I know this isn't John, but this is, there's other questions kind of going on here. But my one of the questions I had when I was reading is, like, of the parts that were memoirish, like which one of those questions that RJ is posing to the divine or to this voice, like which one of those questions was the hardest one for you to wrestle through in your spiritual journey? Because like I look back on my own journey and like the big pillars for me, like hell was a really big one that I really wrestled with for a long time because it was so ingrained. Even like the rapture was a huge thing that was stuck in my mind. The wrath of God, like these were like big ones that like really remember one night it was like 2 o'clock in the morning. I was laying in bed with my wife and I'm saying to her, like, this is keeping me up. Like she's like, you need to go to sleep. You're weird. But like these are the kind of things that kept me up at night. So was there anything like that for you that was really hard to wrestle through?
I mean, hell was probably one of the biggest ones for me. A lot of people like hell was easy. Hell was the first thing that I dumped. For me, the ones that I dumped early, and I'm talking like when I was 18 or 19, was that being gay was a sin. It's just because I had too many gay friends at that point. I was doing local theater, and I don't want to pigeonhole all the gays because and say that all if you're gay, you're in theater. But there is a large gay community in this area that I work in, or that I did theater in, that were part of the LGBTQIA plus community. So at 18, right, being this ultra conservative kid, being dropped into the middle of that was a huge eye opener for me. And I left that first show I ever did. I was still in high school. I did a show. It was called Tomfoolery. It was a blast. Saying I've had this wrong my whole life. The church has this wrong. This isn't sin. There's no sin here. But I had to keep it quiet, right? Because I'm still trying to be 100% in church. But for me, because like you said, hell, the doctrine of hell was so shoved down my throat for so many years and scared the living shit out of me for so long. I mean, I was the kid who couldn't sleep without his door cracked open so I could see the light. So my bedroom happened to be right off the living room. And my parents would stay up later than us. So we'd have a bedtime, right? When I'm like 8 or 9. But I would leave my door cracked open so I could see. I couldn't see the TV, but I could hear it. And I knew my parents were up. And as long as my parents were up, I could go to sleep. But if my parents went to bed before I fell asleep, that was the end. I wouldn't sleep that night because I'm laying in bed wondering if tonight's the night, right? Because how many times did you hear, it could happen tonight. It could happen at any
The
time.
trumpet could
Jesus is
blow
going
at
to
any
come back,
time.
right? And so I'm living in the fear of I didn't do all I was supposed to do during the day. I didn't confess all my sins. So I am literally in bed, like scared that I'm going to hell or that the second coming is happening and I'm going to be the one left behind and I'm going to be running around on this planet trying not to get my head cut off by apparently everyone. As soon as Jesus leaves with the good people, everyone's just going to turn as horrible as possible and Deantines are all of a sudden going to exist
They turn into
again,
like zombies, right?
right?
Coherent zombies, right?
So you would think that would be easy for me to dump, right? That to get rid of that level of fear out of me would be super easy. But my first response when someone says, like, I don't believe hell exists, it's like, well, then where do the bad people go? Where does Hitler go? Where does Pol Pot go? Where does Mussolini go? And I have a whole list of people who don't deserve to go to heaven. And I don't take claim of this question, but I definitely use it I finally had to get to the point where I asked my question, this question to myself. If I was to die and heaven exists and I go to heaven and I walk in and Jesus walks me up to the first person and it's Hitler, am I mad or am I happy?
Mm-hmm.
And I had to get to the point where I could say, I'm rejoicing.
Yeah.
Because even Hitler found a way to enter the pearly gates.
Yeah.
And that answers a lot of questions on where you are in your journey. If that pisses you off,
Yeah.
you don't understand the love of God.
Yeah.
If you
Yeah.
rejoice, then you're starting to understand the love of God, the unending, relentless love of God. If
Yeah.
that that exists, if
Yeah.
God exists.
Yeah.
So for me, that was probably the hardest one because, you know, you get the stupid questions. Well, what if someone comes in to your house and rapes your daughter and kills your wife and your kids? Shouldn't they go to hell? I'm like, well, if you're going to ask me one of the most ridiculous questions you can come up with, which is, first of all, tell me someone in your own life that you've ever heard that happen to.
Right.
The percentage of people who actually know that happened to them, or even a close friend, not something you read in the paper, but a
Yeah.
close friend, is almost zero.
Right.
So I would answer that with the most ridiculous answer, which is, well, you know what would happen? This guy would barge into my house, guns blazing, and I would fall on my knees and I'd pray, and there would be a conversion right there. He would give his life to God and no one would die.
Yeah.
I mean, if you're going to give me a ridiculous question, I'm going to give you a ridiculous
Sure,
answer.
sure.
But yeah, for me, hell, just because it was so ingrained in me and I was so afraid. And then as I was letting go of it, I was so afraid of being wrong.
Yeah.
So after I gave up the idea of hell,
Yep.
I still
That
spent
Christian
sleepless
soldier's in
nights.
there. Yeah. What if you're
Yeah.
wrong,
Going,
John?
you know,
Man.
it's like, what if I'm wrong?
Yeah.
And not only have I condemned myself, but I've condemned my family because I'm telling them it's wrong. I'm condemning my friends because
Yeah.
I let them know it. How many people have I quote unquote led astray now?
Yeah.
So,
Then you're in
I'm,
bigger trouble.
oh yeah.
Right.
So yeah, as you're held, as you're, you know, you're before God and you're held account for all of your stuff before he sends you down to his other residence, because he has to be in charge of it because God is present everywhere.
Yep.
I first get to be berated for how horrible a human being I am, right?
Yeah.
So
Yeah.
that for me was the hardest, probably.
Yeah, that was a big one for me too. And I just had Rob Bell on the podcast a few weeks ago. I talked to him and I was telling him about Love Wins, because that book changed everything for me. And similar to your experience, I was a pastor. I was preaching, you know, every week. And I was going for ordination in the Reformed Church. And as I was getting closer, I started to have these real, like a real conflict inside that, like, I don't really know if I believe all this stuff as much as I need to believe it in order to like be ordained and like to make these arguments in front of these boards and stuff like that. I'm like, I just don't know. And I was starting to like skate away from like preaching about hell and like preaching about, you know, Calvinism was really big. So like predestination, all that kind of stuff. I was like, I'm just going to skate around these topics. But then like the elder board wanted to hear about them, then the congregation wanted to hear, and then the denomination wanted to hear. So I'm like, I just don't think I can do this anymore. So I left. I talked to my wife, who was my fiance at the time. I was like, I don't think I can go on for the next 15, 20 years preaching about stuff that I don't really even know if I believe. Like, this just doesn't make a whole lot of sense to me. And so I left and I went to work at Apple, and I was there for 11 years. And in my first like few months there, I was sitting at my desk and I was having this like crisis of like, I left this job at the church. I prepared my whole life to do this. And now I'm working in some retail job. Like, have I blown up my whole life completely? Like, what am I doing? I'm asking all these questions. And I came across Rob's video that he did for Love Wins. And I went out that night. I got the book. I stayed up to like 2 o'clock in the morning. And I was like, oh my goodness, like, there's another way to think about all of this stuff. Because like, I grew up in that strict fundamentalist evangelical world that it's, this is the way it is, handed down from Jesus and the apostles, like this is what you have to believe. And so I just thought this is the way. And then I see this guy who I watched all of his videos, I read all of his other books. I'm like, this guy is asking the same questions I'm asking. And I didn't really start deconstructing at that point. Like, if I did, it was more internal, very quiet. But it gave me this freedom. This door opened up inside of me, and I was just like, I can't believe there's other ways to think about this. So maybe there's other ways to think about other things. I've been told, like, what
Right.
about Jesus and the cross? Like, if there's no hell in the way that I've been taught, then what's the point of the cross? And that led me down that rabbit hole. And then eventually I got to the LGBTQ rabbit hole and all these different places. And I just was like, wow, but hell was the biggest one, the first one. And it was definitely the hardest one for me to wrestle with. And even today, like, my daughter asked me a question. She's six and she's asking questions now about God. What happens when you die? And she said, well, you know, what about hell? Like, what's that about? And so I try to tell her. And then, like, in my head, there's that voice of like, what if you're wrong? No, and it's still in there, it, like, still chatters away, and like it still parrots back the Bible verses to me that I knew as a kid. And it's just so I don't think that voice will ever really go away, but it's always there to kind of keep me in check.
But I feel like, and I think you probably agree, the voice is not as loud as it used to be.
Right.
And I'm able to answer it a little easier. Yeah, for me, the two books that really sent me down the path, you know, then going down the rabbit hole was Brennan Manning's The Ragamuffin Gospel, which just opened my eyes to a completely different way of looking at God.
It
stepped me into the hyper grace movement for a while, which I left kicking and screaming. Actually, you'd think it'd be the most beautiful place to be, but it became very dogmatic very fast. It was a movement that I think is probably run its course. And then it was the shack, right? Because I remember my brother telling me about the shack years ago, and I'm like, why would I ever read anything by a Christian? And I finally, you know, now I'm questioning stuff, right? So I go ahead and I read it, and it blows me away to the point where at the time I was at a different church. I had just stepped back into church, and I remember I would have weekly meetings with the pastor, and I felt like he was somewhat progressive. And then I went to him and I was like, have you read The Shack? And he's like, no. And it was very matter of fact. And I'm like, oh, again, there are things I cannot talk about in church.
Yep.
And it wasn't until weeks later, because I was like, I was trying to hand this book out to people at my church. And he's like, you know, there's a lot of issues in that book. And if you'd like to talk about them, I'd be more than happy to. And at that point, I'm like, no, I like it. I'm going to go with it.
Yeah.
And so I credit Paul Young as being, and, you know, we've had him on the podcast a couple times now as being the step. And I actually, there's a quote in my book, kind of, and I sent him the book, but I was a little worried that he would read it and get what I was doing. Cause there's a point in the book where I say something like, you've heard it read, you've heard it said in someone else's book that, all paths don't lead to me, but I'm on every path, which is a quote from The Shack. And I said, and my answer from God was, I'm actually, all roads do lead to me, period. And so that's kind of where I believe now, that all roads do lead to the divine or the cosmos or whatever you want to call it. There are no dead ends at all. There are no U-turns. You don't need to do a U-turn anywhere. But that was a beginning point for me. Then you, of course, obviously Rob Bell. Rob Bell was a huge stepping stone for me as well. And I can't remember the name of the book. He writes a book about, it's not asking questions, but what does the Bible really say, or something like that.
Oh yeah, it's what is the Bible? Yeah.
Yeah.
Yep.
So that was a huge book for me too. And then Paul Young's 13, or the lies we believe about God.
Yeah,
I think it was like that was another huge one for me. And so I think Paul Young and I are a lot closer than even what the Shack said. You know, Shack gave a little bit, and that wasn't, I'm sure you've heard the story. That's not the exact version he wrote. His version that he wrote was way more universalist than what the final version
it's
is.
It's toned down a little bit. Yeah.
Yeah. It's toned down a bit. So I know he is, I don't know if he calls it universal salvation, but he definitely has a version of universalism that he follows. I know Brad Jurczak follows a universalist hope, which he steps up to the line of universalism and says, I still think there's a chance for you to say no. I think, again, if there is something after death and there is a God on the other end, sure, you can say no, but God's going to wait for an infinite amount of time for you to say yes. So at the end, everyone will say yes. You just might sit in some kind of limbo for a while arguing with God. And I don't think that would be a bad place either.
Sure.
If I get to sit around and argue and, you know, riff off questions with God just because I'm not sure what the answer is. Let's do it.
Right.
Let's spend
Have your own
eternity
RJ
doing that.
experience.
Yeah. Yeah.
Yeah. So what would you say, like, of all the questions that RJ asks this voice in space, like, what do you think is the one, if you had to pinpoint one question that you feel like has the power to create the most change in somebody's life or maybe even our world, if we could all grasp the answer to this specific question that this divine voice gives, like, what would that be to give our listeners a taste of what to expect in the book? What would be the one question, the one answer that could bring about the biggest transformation in life and in the world?
That's a tough one. There's like 51 questions. That's a funny side note that the book actually had 52 chapters, and then there's something that was then mixed within the book that was its own chapter at one point. So then it went from 52 chapters to 51. I kind of like it because if it was 52 chapters, it almost feels like it should be a devotional.
I was gonna say it's like a weekly devotional. Perfect.
So if and you know. That's still a possibility, right? And yep. I'm not saying it's like a traditional devotional, and obviously there's no place for you to write your thoughts or anything. But what I would say is 51 weeks, spend 51 weeks reading it, and then spend the 52nd week going over what process that would mean for you.
Yeah.
And use that 52nd week as just like a look back on your own. Yourself, and did this book help you process anything to give you a better understanding of what, you know, where you are with the divine?
Yeah.
But that doesn't answer your question. Honestly, there's so many good questions in there that I think would help. You know, does God demand worship is one that really stands out to me.
Mm-hmm.
And because I think we feel this need to worship God in everything that we do,
mm-hmm.
but in the wrong way.
Yeah,
we see it in sporting events, right? Raising our hands to God when we get the touchdown, like God shows your side, not the other side.
That's right.
We see, you know, God being praised as a war ends and one side wins and one side loses. We see God praised as we chose not to get on that airplane and we ended up not dying with the 150 other souls on that plane, mm-hmm. as if God said fuck you to 150 people, but said, you know, praise be to you, the yep. one person who didn't get on.
Yep.
So this idea that if we worship hard enough, that God will give us the ultimate gift, I think is a huge one because it creates this us versus them mentality that enables us to say, well, see, I was able to do this because I'm so much more pure, so much more holy. I pray more. I give God all the glory in everything I do. And then this is something as simple, and I've seen this happen in a church, right? So I was on a praise and worship team at a church, and we're getting ready for the praise and worship that morning, and the printer didn't work.
Mm.
It wouldn't copy our sheet music. So, of course, that's what is it called? Warfare. What's the word I'm looking
spiritual
for?
Warfare.
Spiritual
yeah, it's
warfare.
The devil. Yeah.
Satan doesn't want us. So it's we coming. All have to pray, right? So we all get together and pray.
Mm-hmm.
I was like, or someone didn't pay for the maintenance on the printer or the copier, and it doesn't work today because we didn't take care of it. But again, this is this idea that if we worship hard enough, we pray hard enough, we do all these things, that God is going to reward us, period. And then we see time and time and time again that doesn't work.
That's right.
And then what do you do with that?
Yeah.
When you prayed and you prayed and you had all the faith in the world and your child dies of cancer,
yeah.
right? Or you pray and you pray and you pray and your husband's on a trip and he ends up in a car accident. But you prayed that he'd have a safe trip.
Yeah.
So what do you do with that?
Yeah.
And that's the question that really has to be broken down because it enables us to enter into the pain of others as a human being, not as someone who can pray it away for them or to get to point the finger and say, you weren't faithful enough.
Yeah.
And that's at best hurtful to the other people and at worst destructive in so many ways.
Yeah.
So that'd be one for me. If we could walk away with this idea that we don't need to worship God to be in his favor, And I said he in that moment because I don't believe that there's a
Sure.
gender to God, but in their version, it's a he.
Yeah.
But if we don't pray hard enough and do all the stuff, then we get a pass.
Yep.
It's like, well, it's the whole prosperity gospel too, right?
Yeah.
You know, if you give and give and give and you believe in your heart that you gave from the place in you that says that you are the most faithful, then you're going to be rewarded 7 times, 10 times, 100 times, whatever. And
Yeah.
then they have the out when it doesn't work. Well, you didn't pray hard enough. You weren't,
Yep.
you weren't, you didn't have enough faith.
Yeah.
And it's so destructive. It's so destructive across almost every status of everybody, because everything is boiled down to, do you have enough faith?
Yeah.
And it just doesn't work. So
Yeah.
I would say that one.
Yeah, I think that, I mean, that was one of the biggest things that really sent me down the deconstruction rabbit hole, because whereas I was doing a lot of stuff internally, when my wife had a miscarriage before our daughter was born,
Yeah.
and I remember going out to the car to pull it around to pick her up, and I was screaming at God. I was like, how could you let this happen? Like, we've given our whole lives to you. You know, we both went to Bible college, we both did all the different things in the church,
yeah.
we've been on missions trips, we've devoted our whole life. We've hit all the right buttons on the vending machine, so to speak, you know, and
Yep.
you let this happen. Like,
Yep.
what gifts? Like, I was so mad, and I was like, I think I might just be done with all of this completely. And then
Right.
I started to, like, really, I was like, I got to sit with this question, because this does not make any sense. Cause I started to think about, you know, people who, you know, trigger warning, people who've been raped, you know, like, if,
Yeah.
like, what gives? Like, either if God can prevent that from happening, but does not, then I think God is like a monster, right? Like, that just
Right.
sounds horrible. And, like, I don't know what to do with this. So then I started to come across people like, you know, Tom Ord, you know, who
Right.
wrote God
Yeah.
Can't, and like that sort of theological world. And I was like, oh, like, that just started to open up like a whole nother doorway for me. But it relieved a whole lot of freedom, like, a whole lot of pressure. It gave me a lot of freedom that, like, I don't have to
Yeah.
hit the right buttons on a vending machine. I'm like, me and God are
Right.
good. Me and the divine are good, regardless of what it might look
Right.
like. Regardless of where my life goes, me and God are good, and God is present always. And
Yeah.
that's just been good enough for me. You know,
Yeah.
I don't wrestle with all those different questions anymore, and that feeling like I have to do all the right things to get God to cooperate with me.
Yeah, there's some open theism in my book as well, and that comes directly from Ord. At one point, I, you know, chatting with him, I told him, it's like, I think I'm an Ordian. I think I am. I think I, and to be perfectly honest, there's some issues with open theism too. You know,
Sure.
it doesn't answer all the questions,
No.
but it gets pretty damn close.
Mm-hmm.
And for me, the biggest one was to lose this idea that God is omnipotent, that God
Yeah.
is all powerful.
Yeah.
God is not all powerful. He
Yeah.
can't be, because if he is, you're right, he's a monster.
Yeah.
He's making the choice to only help certain people and not help other people.
Yeah.
And so for me, and it's in my book as well, where I talk about this idea that God can't do everything without us, that we have to be part of the process,
Yeah.
this whole hands and feet of Jesus, right?
That's right.
And that God expects that from us. If God exists, this is the expectation of us to create heaven on earth.
Yeah.
That is our responsibility. Jesus tells us the same thing.
Yeah.
Jesus tells us to create heaven on earth.
Yeah.
So there is definitely some really promising stuff in open theism. And his latest book, I think, even takes it farther, and I have it somewhere, but I can't remember what it's called. The Death of Omnipotence
Yes. Yeah.
and
Yeah.
Birth of Omnipotence, right?
Yeah.
That all-encompassing love
Yeah.
is what God is.
Yeah.
And I think that's even coming closer. And I know that, well, first, he made up a word, so everyone's mad at him because he made up a word. But hey, world, all words are made up.
That's right.
Someone made them all up.
That's right.
And this complete death of omnipotence, I know specifically within the church world, that's a big pill for them to swallow. But God cannot be omnipotent if God allows suffering, period.
Yeah. Yeah.
Because if he does, and if he is, then he is just the complete and ultimate asshole. He makes Hitler look like the Sunday school teacher,
Yeah. Yeah.
honestly.
That's right.
So yeah, that was another one for me to get rid of God being omnipotent. I don't think he's all powerful. He's not all knowing. He's not always, he's not all present. He's just
Yeah.
not in the way that we think. You know, I think God as part of the universe is all present because God is in everything.
Yeah.
If again, I keep saying if he exists, as the Christian God, right? I think there is a divine. I think there is something divine about this universe, but he's definitely not the Christian God,
Yeah.
or they are not the Christian God.
That's right. That's
I think
right.
that's the ultimate answer for me.
Yeah. John, so good, my friend. We're just about out of time, but this has
All
been
right.
a blast. Thank you for taking time for me. Thank you for being
Hey, I
flexible
loved
with the
it.
schedule. I'm glad we were able to make it
Absolutely,
work.
man. Yeah.
Yeah, and real quick, point people to the best places to find you on all the social medias and all the different places.
I do have a bio link, but I don't remember what it is right now. But so the easiest ways to get a hold of me for the podcast is thisisnotchurch.com. I keep that pretty much updated. The book is available through there also. It's just a link to Amazon. So you can either go to thisisnotchurch.com, and that's the way that you can connect with me, my brother, purchase our books. You can click on all the past podcasts. So that's probably the easiest way, but we're on all social media. We're on Instagram, we're on Facebook. We're still on that thing formerly called Twitter, but I don't know how much longer I'm going to be there. It's
Yeah,
getting
same
kind of
here.
annoying. But I am on Threads, or we're on Threads. We're on, I think I said TikTok, Instagram, Facebook. So pretty much all the social medias were there. So just do a search for This Is Not Church podcast and we'll pop up in pretty much any of those.
Awesome. I'll put the links in the show notes, and I think
All
we'll do it
right.
again because I got more questions.
All right, man. I'll be
All
looking
right.
forward to it.